It's a man's universe. Man, unlike woman, is beautiful because man, unlike woman, is a thinking creature. This means man has a thirst for knowledge. He wants to know what the world around him looks like and how it functions. Man thinks. He draws conclusions from the data he encounters. Man is creative. He makes something new out of the information achieved by the above processes. Man is sensitive. As a result of his exceptionally wide, multidimensional emotional scale, he not only registers the commonplace in fine gradations, but he creates and discovers new emotional values and makes them accessible to others through sensible descriptions or recreates them as an artist. Of all the qualities of man, his curiosity is certainly the most impressive. This curiosity differs basically from that of woman. A woman takes interest only in subjects that have an immediate personal usefulness to her. For example, if she reads a political article in the newspaper, it is highly likely that she wants to cast a spell on some political science student. Not that she cares about the fate of the Chinese, Israelis, or South Africans. If she looks up the names of some Greek philosophers in the dictionary, it does not mean she has suddenly taken an interest in Greek philosophy. It means she is trying to solve a crossword puzzle. If she is studying the ads for a new car, it is a fact that most women, mothers included, generally have no idea how the human fetus is formed, how it develops in the womb, what stages it passes through before birth. Of course, it is entirely unnecessary for her to know about these things, since they cannot influence the development of the embryo anyway. It is only important to know that a pregnancy lasts 9 months and that for the duration one must take care of oneself and, in the case of complications, immediately consult one's doctor, who will, of course, restore everything to order. Man's curiosity is something quite different. His desire for knowledge has no personal implications, is purely objective, and in the long run is much more practical than a woman's attitude. One has only to watch a man go past a building site where a newly developed machine is being used, for example, a new kind of dredger. There is hardly a man, regardless of social status, who will pass by without a glance. Many will stop to have a good look and to discuss the characteristics of the new machine, its advantages and disadvantage, and its differences from previous models. A woman would never think of stopping at a building site unless, of course, the crowd was so big that she thought she might miss something exciting. Construction worker crushed by bulldozer. In that case, she would demand to know all the details and then look the other way. Man's curiosity is universal. There is almost nothing that does not interest him, whether it is politics, botany, nuclear physics, or God knows what. Even subjects out of his province hold his interest, such as bottling fruit, preparing a cake mix, or caring for a baby. And a man could not be pregnant for 9 months without knowing all the functions of the placenta and ovaries. Men not only observe the world around them, it is in their nature to make comparisons and to apply the knowledge they have gained elsewhere with the ultimate aim to transform this newfound knowledge into something else, something new. One need not emphasize the fact that practically all the inventions and discoveries in this world have been made by men, and not only in the fields of electricity, aerodynamics, gynecology, cybernetics, mathematics, quantum mechanics, hydraulics, and the origin of species. In addition, men have devised the principles of child psychology and infant nutrition, as well as pasteurization and other means of preserving food. Even the changes in women's fashions, or other such trivial matters as the creation of new menus and palatal nuances, are traditionally the province of men. If one wishes to have an unusual culinary treat, generally, one will not find it at home, but at a restaurant where, of course, the chef is male. A woman's sense of taste is so blunted and deadened by the repetitive preparation of unimaginative, run-of-the-mill, tasteless, everyday cooking that, even if she wanted to try out new foods, she would not be capable of it. There is no female gourmet. Women are good for almost nothing. With his many gifts, man would appear to be ideally suited, both mentally and physically, to lead a life both fulfilled and free. Instead, he chooses to become a slave, placing his many discoveries at the service of those who are incapable of creation themselves. At the service of mankind, man's own synonym for women, and of the children of these women. How paradoxical that this very sex, which is capable of leading a life as nearly perfect as possible, is prepared to give it up, to offer it all to the female sex, which is not interested in such perfection. We have grown so accustomed to the blunted mechanism of one-sided exploitation of one group of human beings by a parasitic clique that all our moral values have become completely perverted. Without really giving the matter any thought, we consider the male sex as a kind of Sisyphus. He has come into the world to learn, to work, and to father children. His sons, in their turn, will learn to work and produce children, and so it will continue forever. It has become almost impossible to think why else men should be here. If a young man gets married, starts a family, and spends the rest of his life working at a soul-destroying job, he is held up as an example of virtue and responsibility. The other type of man, living only for himself, working only for himself, doing first one thing and then another simply because he enjoys it and because he has to keep only himself, sleeping where and when he wants, and facing woman when he needs her, on equal terms and not as one of a million slaves, is rejected by society. The free, unshackled man has no place in its midst. How depressing it is to see men, year after year, betraying all that they were born to. New worlds could be discovered, worlds one hardly dares even to dream of, could be opened by the minds, strength, and intelligence of men. Things to make life fuller and richer, their own life, that is, of which women are ignorant, and more worthwhile could be developed. All these things could be done by men. Instead, they forsake all these tremendous potentials and permit their minds and their bodies to be shunted onto sidings to serve the repulsively primitive needs of women. Man has the key to every mystery of the universe in his hand, but he ignores it. He lowers himself to the level of woman and insinuates himself into her favor. With his mind, his strength, and his imagination, all intended for the creation of new worlds, he opts instead for the preservation and improvement of the old. And if he happens to invent something new, he needs to prefix it with the excuse that it will one day be useful to all mankind, i.e., to women. He apologizes for his achievements, for making space flights instead of providing more comforts for his wife and children. The most tiresome aspect of technological advances is having to translate them for television ads into female language composed of children's prattle and sweet love talk. Man is begging woman to be patient with him and his discoveries, or at least to buy them. Women's proven lack of imagination makes clear that they have no a priori need for new inventions. If they did, they would invent things more often themselves. We are so accustomed to men doing everything with women in view that anything else seems unthinkable. For example, couldn't composers create something apart from love, dependency, songs? Couldn't writers give up their romantic novels and love, dependency, poems, and try to write literature? Can painters only produce nudes and profiles of women, abstract or realistic? Why can't we have something new after all this time, something we have never seen before? It should really be possible for scientists to forget dedicating their work to their wives. Anyhow, they will never, never be able to understand them. When will the time come when experimental films have no longer to be weighed down by sexy female bodies, when news reports on space travel do not need to be encumbered with the interviews of peroxided astronauts' wives? Even the astronauts themselves might stop having schmaltzy love, dependency, songs played to them during their interplanetary travels. We have absolutely no idea what the world would be if men really used their intelligence and imagination instead of wasting it. Inventing pressure cookers that cook faster. Wall-to-wall carpeting that is more stain-resistant. Detergents that wash whiter. And lipsticks that are more water-resistant is a waste of time. Instead of producing children who will in turn produce children, thus pushing the enjoyment of life still further out of their own reach, they should try living themselves. Instead of probing the depth of woman's mysterious psyche, mysterious only because there is nothing behind it, they should study their own psyche, perhaps even that of creatures possibly inhabiting other planets, and think out new ways and means of establishing contact with them. Instead of inventing ever more deadly weapons to fight wars destined only to defend private property, i.e. women's, they should be developing ever more efficient methods of space travel. Travel which would tell us more about the worlds we never dreamed of. Unfortunately, men who are capable and willing to work and think in every other field of research have declared everything concerning woman taboo. What is worse is that this taboo has always been so effective that it is no longer recognized as such. Women's wars, women's children, women's towns, all these are made by men. Women just sit back, getting lazier, dumber, and more demanding, and at the same time, richer. A primitive but effective system of insurance policies, policies for marriage, divorce, inheritance, widowhood, old age, and life, ensures this increasing wealth. For example, in the USA, half of the total private capital is in the hands of women. Yet the number of working women has constantly decreased over the last decades. The situation is not much different in industrial Europe. At this time, women already have complete psychological control over men. It won't be long before they have material control as well. Men seem to be quite unaware of these facts and go on finding happiness in their own subjugation. There could be justification for their attitude only if women really were the charming, gracious creatures men believe them to be. Fairy princesses, angels from another world, too good both for men themselves and for this earthly existence. It is quite incredible that men, whose desire for knowledge is unbounded in every other field, are really totally blind to these facts. That they are incapable of seeing women as they really are. With nothing else to offer but a vagina, two breasts, and some punch cards programmed with idle, stereotyped chatter, that they are nothing more than conglomerations of matter, lumps of stuffed human skin pretending to be thinking human beings. If men would only stop for a moment in their headlong creativity and think, they could easily tear the masks off these creatures with their tinkling bracelets, frilly blouses, and gold leather sandals. Surely it would take them only a couple of days, considering their own intelligence, imagination, and determination, to construct a machine, a kind of human female robot, to take the place of woman. For there is nothing original in her, neither inside nor out, which could not be replaced. Why are men so afraid to face the truth?